This is Richard Wilson speaking. Thank you for downloading One Foot in the Podcast. So I'm a wrinkly, crinkly, but don't shed a tear. I'm not exactly a little old dear. One thing for sure, I'm still bloody well here. One foot in the grave. One foot in the grave. One foot in the grave.
Hello?
Hello, everyone. I'm very pleased to have this guest on today. Throughout the podcast, you've likely heard me refer to the Complete Warmth in the Grave book time and time again, aptly named the Bible, aka the Weber book, by listeners and I. Without this man's book, the podcast prep would have been significantly worse over the years, especially my knowledge on this fine comedy. It's a book I first read on a holiday in the Algarve in 2013. I'd also met this author 4 years previous to that at an Only Fools convention, although I'll admit, I wasn't sure who he was back then, with the greatest respect. I hadn't connected the dots that he'd also written in Only Fools book, I and many others' own. I had actually met him. Unbeknownst to this guest, he's become somewhat of a legend on the pod over the last 4 years. I'd started to lose faith I'd ever get hold of him, but alas, thanks to a regular listener in Peter who directed me to this guest's Facebook, I'm right chuffed to be able to welcome the man himself. It's only Richard Weber. Welcome, Richard.
Yeah, hello then. Yeah, well, thanks for inviting me on.
That's quite all right. Yeah, you have quite the CV of books that you've written over the years. Ultimately, The Complete One from the Grave, I consider the main one because I'm biased towards One from the Grave show. Mm. But my word, you've written quite a few, haven't you, over the years? Obviously, I mentioned Fools and Horses. Some others do have them. Porridge, 50 Years of Carry On. I can see there, Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads, a whole list. I don't suppose you can say you have a favourite. I guess you're proud of each book that you write, but have you got one that sort of stands out in terms of achievement?
Well, it is not just because I'm on your podcast, but it is really this book here. I mean, in a way, you know, I broke into the market of TV tie-ins, as they're called, when I heard about Reggie Perrin coming back as a series. I was keen on the original three series that David Nobbs wrote. And when I heard about the legacy of Reggie Perrin, of course, about Len Rossiter coming back, well, the series itself was very disappointing. But that was when I sort of started in this field. That was the first book. So that one, you know, I hold sort of fond memories of that particular book and certainly of Dad's Army, the Dad's Army books I've written, which is probably my favourite sitcom of all time. But as far as the whole package is concerned, I think the One Foot in the Grave book is probably the book for a number of reasons, really, that I could go into if you want me to.
Well, did I hear right that you said that the first book you written was The Life and Legacy of Reginald Perrin? Was that the first one? Was that was that the mid-90s? Because I was thinking it was the... I think I might be getting confused with another comeback. I'm sure it was Reggie Perrin with Martin Clunes doing for reprising the...
Yeah.
Not reprising a role, but he brought... Is it 2008 or so? But yeah, you've written books before then, haven't you?
Yeah. He did a series based on obviously, the Reggie Perrin idea. But it was when David Nobbs wrote a series called The Reggie Perrin, which that was when I first got into this market. And I was working as a journalist by that point anyway. But I wrote to David Nobbs... the same as I ended up writing to David Renwick, but wrote to David Nobbs and said, look, you know, I hear the BBC bringing back the idea of, you know, the Reggie Perrin. I'd love to write a book about the history of the programme. And at that time, you know, TV tie-ins were very, very popular, of course. Since then, the internet has very much taken over. So you see fewer of these behind-the-scenes books now, sadly. But so that was the first. And then that was a series of books that Virgin Publishing were doing, because I then wrote a Dad's Army book for them and then moved on to things like the A to Z of Dad's Army, the A to Z of Only Fools and Horses, which is why I would have been at the convention you mentioned.
I couldn't believe it. I've got a picture of you. You signed my book. I said, with the greatest respect, I wasn't too sure at the time. I'm sure I would have known, but in 2009, I think it was, I didn't have a phone back then where I could Google whatever I needed to Google in the moment. So again, it's the greatest respect. I wasn't too sure, but I thought, no, of course you were an author. But all these years later, obviously doing a podcast and on One Foot in the Grave, and within a few episodes of recording, one of my listeners said, have you ever read the Richard Weber book, The Complete One Foot in the Grave? I said, I have actually. I've got that in my attic, fished it out, and we've forever referred to it as the Weber book, the Bible, because it's got so many interesting facts and the behind the scenes stuff. Before I go into all that, before you written the Reggie Perrin book, were you an author by trade, as it were? Was that your profession? Was it a hobby? Obviously, that's become your expertise, or how did it all start?
Well, firstly, you have to excuse me if I keep rubbing my eyes. Hay fever's already starting to take effect.
Oh, no. But, only in April as well.
Yeah, no, I did actually. I was writing articles, you know, many years before that, as a freelance journalist. But I was always interested in sort of classic British films. So my first attempt at a book was called Familiar Faces, which was a collection of chapters, one chapter per British character actor. So people like Michael Ward, Victor Madden, etc. And I was able to attract an agent, but sadly, he wasn't able to find a publisher. But it was a good sort of introduction to the idea of book writing. And then, as I say, I carried on with the articles, mainly for magazines like TV Times, the Daily Express newspaper, very much featuring on TV entertainment. But as I said, I was a fan of the Reginald Perrin series, the original series from the 70s. And then when I heard about the new series, The Legacy, that was when I then got involved. And I contacted the publisher, Virgin Publishing, a very good editor called Rod Green, who was there at the time. And it was just simply, back then, I'm not sure it was an email, I'm not sure, but it was a letter saying, look, this is happening. I'm in contact with David Nobbs. He's very supportive. You know, I'd like to write a book. And luckily, Virgin were keen, and it went from there. But we were saying about what would be the most comprehensive book, you know, perhaps my favourite book of all time, and it is The One Foot, for various reasons, that hopefully we'll go into. But one thing I was horrified about is that I looked at the author picture on the back cover taken some years ago, as you can tell, and you think, gosh, you know, how time takes its toll.
You have an age, Richard.
Well, the great, quite good, I think. But there you go.
No, it's very surreal having you on the pod. Like, you're just there on. Obviously, listeners won't actually see this. They're only hearing what I'm saying now. But you just held up the complete one from the great book. That's your book, and that's, like I said, it just feels like a legend of this podcast. I can't tell you how many times it's referred to. But like I said, with the internet being so prominent in the last 25 years, comedy fans and fans of other, you know, film and TV, they get their facts and their knowledge somewhere online. There's a source for everything. But surely it starts off with guys like you who go to the trouble of writing a book or an article or doing the research. Obviously, you might have a writer or a director do an interview, and then they give out some key information. But a lot of the articles of interest come from authors like you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would actually. Yeah, because certainly if you're creating a book, you know, you've got to sort of dig deep to get the full history, and it, you know, involves a lot of interviews. Not just with, in my case, anyway, like it to be as comprehensive as possible. Any book I get involved in, so it's a case of, you know, sourcing, tracing some of these people as well, production, you know, members of the production team, who are very important, you know, to a book like this, because they're providing the behind-the-scenes stories, tells, and anecdotes. But, I mean, the first thing I always do for a book like this is, I like it to be authorised, is to, of course, contact the sitcom writer. And why this book, I think, works so well is because of the support I got from David Renwick. You know, not only did he give up his time for me to interview him several times, but he allowed me to look at his sort of scrapbooks that I took away for the evening whilst I was staying up near where he lived, so I could read them in the hotel overnight. The big thing for this book was that he allowed me access to his diaries, which, and you know, David was very honest and open in his writing in his diaries. And I think you can tell that by some of the extracts that have been used. And if it wasn't for the diary entry, I don't think it would have been such a good
That's
book.
That's right. I just wonder if the other books you'd written, I've got The 80 Set of Fools and Horses. I'm just trying to recollect if... Did you ever speak to John Sullivan directly? I imagine you did. That's fascinating to me. Passed away far too young, to 2011. But it's very... There's a couple of Fools and Horses documentaries. You know, there was a 2002 one and a UK Gold did one, didn't they, in 2017, I think. But apart from that, there's quite a lot of, you know, material in those documentaries. But there's fans of Fools have always sort of complained there's not really any extras on the DVDs or videos. So very little amount from John Sullivan himself, apart from a sort of a main interview on the 2002 documentary. But I guess you had that sort of privileged access to John Sullivan himself, who could give you all sorts of first-hand information. But what was he like? Did you speak to him on the telephone? Was it in person or
face to face? I went up to his home and interviewed him there, and then I did another little book, which was a series of script extracts, basically, and that involved another interview with him. I found him a really lovely chap, very down to earth, nice working class person.
Yeah.
You know, he was just a nice chap to talk to and to deal with. You know, like you say, so sadly died, you know, at such a young age. And also his son, Tim Sullivan, who I've got to know. So, or Jim Sullivan. Sorry,
Jim and Dan. I know Jim writes, doesn't he? He's co-written the musical with Paul Whitehouse.
Yeah.
Did Dan Sullivan ever delve into the writing at all? I don't really know much about Dan as much.
Never sort of spoken to Dan, but John was, you know, a lovely man. I really enjoyed the interviews and the time that he gave up and gave insights into his scripts for the A to Z, but also that little book of scripts that I did, The Best of British Comedy, I think the title was called. There was that one part, and Summer Wine. It was a collection of three books that HarperCollins published. Dad's Army, David Croft, Jimmy Perry, brilliant people to speak to. Interviewed them many, many times and almost became, I would say, a friend of theirs. And they were always very supportive with the books that I was writing on their sitcom. But no, David Rennick was brilliant. And I've spoken to him since on various things. And as I said, he was very honest and very open. And it was valuable for a book like this. And it also opened the doors to interviews with Richard Wilson, Annette Crosby, etc. Because once they know that the sitcom writer's behind the book, you know, then they're willing to sort of chat to you.
That's true. They you've automatically got their respect, haven't you? If it's, like I said, if it's an authorised matter. Did you get any access to the scripts of the episodes of One Foot? Because we're always keen to know. David sent me a two or three digital ones, obviously ones from on an email. It's very nice of him. I'm yet to read through those scripts and watch the episodes side by side to see if there's any deleted scenes. I don't suppose you recall anything significant. If you did go through any of the scripts, that might not have made it to airing. It's a long time ago, I know, but I don't suppose anything stood out for you at all.
Not that rings a bell. I mean, David was so in control of his scripts, and I think mentioned in the book that, you know, it's very unusual for the writer to be there every minute of the recordings and the rehearsals. But I can understand why David felt that way. You know, it was his baby. He had written it. He saw what he wanted to see on screen. And rather than, I suppose, some writers, more inexperienced writers, might have felt that, I'm just really pleased that the BBC have accepted my sitcom. And then the scripts get changed. And David, you know, had quite a lot of control over the production, over every aspect of the show, because it was his creation. And I can fully understand that.
Of course. But
significant cuts or scenes ordered. Can't think of any, because I think David wrote very tight. It was very tight scripts. You know, he knew, you know, the time requirement was, and he wrote to that number of minutes that were going to be used. I may be wrong, and there may be stuff that didn't appear, but nothing springs to mind at the moment.
No, sure. Have you ever had a sitcom writer or cast member, not just of One Foot, but any of the books you've written for any of the comedies, make a U-turn on the information they've given you for any reason? Like, I shouldn't have told you that bit. Can you take it out, sort of thing? Or
No, not at all. No, I don't think I have, which is good, I suppose, really. I mean,
that is good, to be fair. And if they had, I suppose you wouldn't be telling me, would you? But I don't know, the process to writing the book from start to finish on average, I know it's all depending on the information at source, how long that takes to get to you. How long does it take you to complete a book once you've got all the information to hand? Are you writing it as you go, or are you waiting till you have everything to hand before you put it all on paper?
Just thinking of, say, the One Foot book as an example.
Yeah.
I would have probably got the majority of my interviews together, first of all. So David, you know, Susie Belbin, who was also excellent, really supportive, met her at her home and, you know, spoke to her several times afterwards. She was really supportive as well, as, you know, were Richard, Annette, and all the cast and all the production team. No, I don't think I've ever had anybody come back and say, oh, well, you know, I'd like it if you could take that out. I shouldn't have said that.
That's good to hear, I suppose, isn't it? I don't know if we can expect any follow-up books to the ones you've written, you know. Obviously, I don't think it's possible to do a one-foot follow-up, is there? But is any of the ones you've written to date, you know, have you been approached or have you suggested maybe I could do a part two sort of thing? Or have you been commissioned for something recently? You might not be able to divulge that information right now, Richard, but is there anything we can know about or is it hush-hush for now?
No, not at all. No, I mean, well, the last book I wrote was actually a walking book, believe it or not. I live live on the edge of Exmoor and I'm a keen walker, hill walker. The last book I did, which came out through a company called Pocket Mountains, was 40 favourite walks on Exmoor. So that was just another sort of area that I enjoy writing about. As far as like the TV tie-ins are concerned, no, I mean, they were all hopefully fairly comprehensive, which would have meant that difficult to write another book about, certainly by me anyway. I mean, if you take some subjects like Dad's Army, there have been books by Graham McCann, you know, very good books. So he wrote a book.
Do you know Graham well? Because I often see him interviewed on various comedy documentaries. Are you familiar with each other or only through print like everyone else? Or
yeah, we've exchanged a few emails and that, and he seems a very nice man and has written some good books. One about Galton and Simpson, I think he wrote, or was it? Yeah, I've got it up on my shelf there. Not actually specifically about Galton and Simpson, but the office, because there were quite a few writers that were working there, Spike Milligan, etc., in that particular company. But no, so I don't know him personally, but we've spoken and exchanged the odd email, but nothing much more than that. Well, I think what I always tried to do was to create a book that was so comprehensive that I personally couldn't write a follow-on. I mean, I don't think you would. How could you cover, say, a book on One Foot in the Grave and only write about half the series, you know, in the hope that...
That'll be the complete.
Yeah.
Again, this is, I know it's many years ago you've written this particular book, but is there a standout moment of discovery when you received interesting information about behind the scenes? Anything that stood out whilst writing the One Foot book? They thought, oh, wow, the fans are going to love this.
Yeah, because interesting enough, I mean, you know, I was a big fan of Dad's Army before I wrote books about Dad's Army. I wouldn't say I was the top fan of One Foot in the Grave. It was actually a sitcom that I perhaps didn't know quite so much about. So from that point of view, it was quite different going into writing a book about a sitcom that I wasn't so familiar with. I suppose discovering, I'm sure other people knew before me, of course, and you probably did, but discovering who was considered, you know, when Richard Wilson initially turned the part down, I mean, people like Les Dawson, Andrew Sachs. I mean, I just couldn't imagine Andrew Sachs playing it, really. Les Dawson, I could see him possibly.
Unfortunately, it would have only lasted a couple of series, wouldn't it? Because he passed away, what, 93, was it? 93?
It was about that. So, yeah, that wouldn't have worked well, would it? But so I suppose that sort of fact was quite interesting. That Richard Wilson, I wouldn't say he didn't initially want Annette Crosby to play the part, but you know, he had another actress in mind who he'd worked with.
Okay, I didn't know that, unless it's in the book and I've forgotten.
Yeah, it is in the book.
Got to test myself on this. There's quite a few, my listeners have gone on to buy your book through Amazon or eBay because I've banged on about it that much. And I think you've gained a few more fans of your work and no doubt they've looked at the other books you've written. I suppose Dad's Army is your single most favourite sitcom. Would you say, to just for fun, is there any similarity between a Mannering and a Meldrew at all?
I think I think I'm turning into a Victor Meldrew.
Are we all?
I'll tell you the reason why is that you know, I think David used Victor Meldrew as a voice who was telling the world or the TV world certain things that that he was angry about with society, and I think whether it's because I've got older, like Victor did, but I think there's a lot of people that really can still get what Victor Meldrew was all about. You know, when you think of what society's like now, you know, all the potholes in the road, the NHS, you know, all the aspects of society that Victor moaned about, I'm moaning about. And I think a lot of people are.
I don't think you're alone in that. Yeah. You know,
that's the reasons why I think that the show and the character was so successful, that people could relate to him. But I think, you know, the realism, you know, was an integral part of the show's fabric. And that's one of the things I liked about One Foot in the Grave, is that David never shied away from the difficult subjects. And I think what he wanted to do was to, you know, push the boundaries of situation comedy. Very much up until then, it had been very sort of middle class, suburban comedy. You know, I think it's really good. It's probably one of the best comedies, you know, realistic comedies, if you like, if there's such a thing, because he wasn't afraid to, you know, cover subjects.
He was the underdog. And we love an underdog, I suppose, don't we? He's always up against it and very misunderstood, especially by his neighbours, certainly on one side, in that, you know, Patrick and Pippa. I suppose next year will be 25 years since the show finished, which is crazy to even utter that sentence. Has there been a comedy in that since 2000 that's come close to One Foot? Obviously, I'm being biased. You know, The Office, Alan Partridge are excellent comedies. Yeah. Is there anything else that's, in your opinion? And is there any modernish, I say modern, in the last 20 years that you would, for argument's sake, would like to write about? Is there anything or are you just not that interested or that invested in the more modern comedies?
No, I don't enjoy it at all. Most of my TV watching now is old films. I mean, at the moment, you know, we're watching old episodes of Heartbeat, which is, you know, one of the dramas I used to enjoy, but also Hawaii Five-0 we're watching at the moment. You know, believe it or not. I just don't find a lot of current TV. I mean, okay, the news programs, documentaries, and that. As far as comedy and drama is concerned, I'm just not interested now. Nothing comes up to the standard of One Foot in the Grave, Dad's Arm, Rising Damp, you know, all these sort of sitcoms. So no, I'm not interested. I can't remember the last sitcom I've ever watched.
Sure. Did you watch Jonathan Creek, David Remick's other masterpiece?
No, never got into that. Because David wrote it, I'm sure it's
very good. If you Locked Room Mysteries, and it's got the very similar humor. That's one I personally recommend. It's so good. It's one I keep going back to anyway for a rewatch. Just out of interest, and I ask pretty much all guests this question: final episode of One Foot in the Grave. We obviously sadly see Victor killed. The question on every fan's lips is, did Margaret seek revenge? Did she carry out a certain deed with Glynis? In your opinion, do you think she went ahead? Did she cause some damage? Did she call the police on her? Did she just leave it? What do you think? If you do have an opinion, of course.
I think she would have pulled back from doing anything too drastic. You know, even though, of course, you know, terribly upset, grieving, as you imagine. I think she might have phoned the police. I mean, if you'd asked me what was my favourite episode, although it might sound a bit morbid to say that last one, I would probably say that was certainly one of the best, if not the best, piece of writing that David did in the series. I mean, there were other great scenes. You know, son in particular, and my daughter. Love the scene, you know, where he picks up the dog rather than the phone. I mean, where the ashes are knocked, you know, floor or table. I can't remember what it was now. But that final episode, just a brilliant piece of writing. And when you also think that, again, this is where David's bringing in a little bit of realism, that when he decided that he was going to, you know, kill off Victor, or had to, because he'd probably always be asked, oh, when's Victor coming back? When's Victor coming back?
Yeah, it's so true. They would. He gets asked now, I think.
Yeah, he does.
Is he going to be a ghost? You know, could he be in a care home, you know, as a ghost? Or
decided that Victor would die would be through a motoring accident, because David was fed up with reckless driving, hated it. That's where a little bit of David is coming back into the scripts and his views on the world. So I think probably, you know, in Victor and Victor's attitudes about the world, a lot of those were David's. But as I said to you, they've certainly become mine as well. Because
that's true.
I see myself moaning about things that Vic moaned about.
Minutes before you came onto the podcast, we've sold our house. And I hope the buyer isn't listening to this podcast, but we just noticed on the ceiling a damp patch, which above that is the toilet. And oh my God, goodness me, that's got to be sorted before exchange. So that's panicked me a little bit, slightly moaned up. Why has that got up and now and not, say, last year before we ever thought about selling? A completely different topic, that is.
No, but it's funny, your point there is quite interesting because David's philosophy on life was that if something can go wrong, it will go wrong.
It will go wrong. Yes, that's true. And I remember in the book, there was, and I spoke, had David on the pod a few times. It's blessed him. He gives, much like yourself, gives up his time and is freely talk about his experiences writing and stuff. And in the book, there was a bit about David, if it's sunny in the morning, but it's forecast to rain in the afternoon, he won't bother going out. Because what's the point? It was something along those lines. I think I sort of get that, but others might go seize the day and enjoy the sun, and then come inside. Whereas David is more, is it really worth the hassle of getting in the car, going to the beach or whatever?
Yeah.
Come home and you know, he is one foot fans do recognize that this is the writer's channeling his energies and his beliefs into the lead character, which is absolutely fair game, isn't it? Also, I've not met David in person, but when you were interviewing for this book, did you get a touch of Victor energy? Obviously, he's very calm, David. He comes across very calm, but did you notice any Victor subtleties in his how he was projecting his thoughts and experiences?
Yeah, I think so, because I think, as I mentioned, you know, many of the things that Victor was moaning about are really probably what David would or has moaned about in life, like probably a lot of us. But he, you know, he's a journalist by trade, and but what I did like about him is that, as I said, some writers would be happy just to have got the commission, pass it all over to the TV production team, and leave them to it. But you know, I sort of respected David for the fact that he wasn't going to let that happen, and you know, he wanted to be involved in every aspect, and although it might have caused a few issues at times because people thought, well, what's David doing involved in this? You know, this is our area. You know, I respect the fact, you know, it's his creation, as I said, and he wanted to see, and if a line was to be changed, he had to be involved in that, because from his point of view, he'd spent so many hours writing these scripts that one little change could throw out what he was trying to achieve. But I mean, whether any of the mannerisms were there, I probably wouldn't say that, but I'm sure some of the thoughts were there, definitely.
And I don't suppose you met his wife early. Was she at all like Margaret, or completely? Because he does base some of, I'm sure he's mentioned he's based some characteristics, maybe on Margaret, or maybe not Jean Wallboys, but did you get to meet Ellie? Was she nice? I'm sure she was.
Yeah, very nice. I mean, she left us to it, but I was sort of vegetarian, and I'm sort of vegan now, but or follow a vegan diet. But at the time, I was sort of vegetarian. And when I arrived quite early on, David sort of said, "Oh, hopefully you can sort of stay for some lunch." And then he mentioned, I think, that Ellie was vegetarian. I said, "Oh, that's okay. I am as well." And that sort of almost broke the ice. She seemed very, very pleasant, very nice.
That's nice.
So
I live with a vegan, and it's I have the vegan alternative, so I try my best with it. Not as committed as you guys, but David's very, he's very this, because Onefoot's got so many animal references, especially animals dying, you know, being killed, dead, or just being referenced as a whole. But he's very what's the phrase? He's a lover of animals, and he, you know, I believe, did you say he's a vegetarian now?
Not sure whether he is. I think his wife was, Ellie.
Well, yeah.
When I met her.
I'm sure he's not, I won't say regretted, but he looks back on some of the, especially the cat in the freeze, the dead cat in the freezer moment.
Mm.
And although it's just one of the funniest scenes, especially with the one-liners Victor comes out with Margaret, I think he feels like he'd like to have done it a different way.
Yeah.
But I disagree. I just think it matters at the time. That was the writing That's what he came up with. I don't think he should regret it. I don't think he, again, regret's a strong word, but I'm sure I detected that he would look back and go, oh, I wonder if I could have not made it so cruel for the poor animal. But I don't know. I mean, it's not real, is it? I mean, it's conveying a certain thing, but he's very much, he's got cats. I know pet cats. He's very, very, he and Ellie are very attached to them. And yeah, I think what you're saying was if he was writing something else in that, another comedy or a scene, I don't think he'd put an animal in the firing line, should we say? But it was just full of animal references, wasn't it? The show. Yeah.
But, you know, picking up on that point, I think it's so easy years later to look back and think, I would have done that different. Perhaps I shouldn't have done that. I suppose time when you're writing to a deadline as well, you know, and you can't keep changing things. You know, you've got to sort of move on and move on to the next script. So I suppose really if you were to ask every writer, you know, what would you change, you know, about your sitcom or particular episodes, they'd all have perhaps ideas.
That's true.
In some cases, regrets. Oh, I wish I hadn't perhaps covered that in so much detail. And of course, you know, we're in this sort of so-called woke world today as well, where, you know, people are offended by virtually everything. So that creates a tension. I was speaking to a writer and actor today, actually, a different program, saying that, you know, obviously his show wouldn't be made today. Just because of sort of the silly thing, you can't laugh at anything these days. That's what you offend. You know, you offend. You're always going to offend someone now. Whereas perhaps, you know, back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, you know, you could get away with it. But whether that's right or wrong, who knows? But I think at the point it has destroyed comedy a little bit.
Well, we certainly don't see much of it, do we? We just don't seem to. Doesn't seem to get commissioned. I'm sure ITV made a decision a few years ago to not commission sitcoms here on out. I don't know if that'll change if they get a new commissioner in. I certainly miss the multicam studio audience, live studio audience sitcoms. I mean, Not Going Out is a very much a dying breed, isn't it? Mrs. Brown's Boys, whether you love it or hate it. I've still got respect for those shows because they're still on stage filming in front of a live audience. Yeah. I miss that. I really do miss it. I think it's like I said, a couple of my favourite comedies aren't filmed in front of a live audience, in The Royal Family and The Office.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's all the others that have come before us over the last 15, 20 years. It's not been many of them. They're not been that, for me, for my money, not that great. It's missing the audience laughing to the one. And obviously the pacing of characters in comedies delivering a one line is different. You know, without an audience there, obviously, in front of a live audience, they're pausing at the right moments, then delivering their one-liners and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's sad. Well, hopefully it'll make a comeback. You never know. But I suppose we did have 50-odd years of studio audience sitcom comedies,
right,
didn't we? To be fair, we have got quite a lot. I'm an advocate of, I've said this time and time again, don't chuck your DVDs away. Keep them. All videos. And if you have done, buy them, because you can't trust a streaming service, whether they haven't got the license to upload them, or, like you say, with woke stuff, maybe they don't feel they can put it on their platform. Maybe they'll cut a scene out. And if you're a big fan of that comedy, it's going to rile you up a bit. So the best way you can combat that is just buy the DVD. Don't chuck a DVD player away. And certainly buy a book like yourself, because like we've established, certain comedies don't have that many extras, behind the scenes interviews, and the One Foot in the Grave book by yourself is absolute gem.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for that.
Absolutely love it, and I can't believe here you are on the podcast, because I started to believe you weren't real. You just Richard Webber was it was a David Renwick an alias of it.
Yeah,
but no, it's I've really enjoyed having you on the podcast, and. Is anyone in your family in the creative industry like yourself?
Just myself, yeah. No, that's right. I'm the only one. But you know, who knows? Perhaps my son or my daughter might.
Yeah.
So my son's still at college. My daughter's obviously in her own building up her own career at the moment, but in a, you know, totally different industry. Who knows? They might sort of take up writing at a later age.
They might. Yeah. I've got friend of the podcast. He does a 2.4 children podcast.
Oh.
JD Collins. I give JD a shout out. He's an author as well, and he's currently writing a with Andrew Marshall's help.
Oh yeah,
guidance anyway. A 2.4 children book. I ask this not being patronizing to JD. I hope they've been helpful, but I suppose have you got any advice for I don't want to call him a budding writer because he is a writer, but I presume he hasn't written a book on comedy before. He's currently writing it. It's no secret. He talks about it on his podcast. Is there anything you could say or recommend or advise someone like JD who's currently developing a book on comedy?
Mm.
Anything from your experience?
I think the first thing he's done right is to get the backing of Andrew Marshall. With David, what David did for me was just to write some introductory letters. You know, this is David Renwick, Richard Webber's writing a book about One Foot, fully behind the project, etc. Can you give him your help? And, you know, I was able to then send that out to people that I didn't personally know, and that opened many doors. So having Andrew Marshall on board is, you know, brilliant, a good first step. I mean, in this day and age, and knowing that, as we said earlier, the internet's very much taken over the world of TV tie-ins, if you like. I would, it depends. If he wants to write it also as a fan and he just wants to see a book and he's perhaps even considering self-publishing, fine. If he wants to attract a commercial publisher, I would initially perhaps prepare an overview, like a synopsis of what he's going to cover. State very clearly in there that he's got the backing of Andrew Marshall. And I would quite early on try to attract a publisher because, you know, there is a lot of time and effort involved. And, you know, I wouldn't want anyone to sort of write the whole book and then find that there's no publisher out there interested. I'm not saying that's going to be the case here, but if I was in his shoes, I would very early on want to get a publisher on board before I, you know, spent loads and loads of time interviewing and writing the script, the manuscript.
Yeah, that's a good shout. To be honest, he may well have. I haven't caught up with him on the book front for a while, but best of luck to him in completing it. I know he's spoken to different cast. He's had some of the cast on his show, so that's very much a win. Thanks very much, Richard, for coming to the podcast. It's a dream come true for this pod, having the main man on. I was just as excited having you on as I was when Richard and Doreen, David, agreed to come onto the podcast, Owen, purely because I feel like you're, without realizing, you're like heart of the pod because of your book. Hope you've enjoyed reminiscing on the process of writing the book.
Yeah, very much.
And stuff.
Yeah, thanks very much.